It is Thursday, the 3rd of May, and I'm sitting with Dinesh at Intel. How did you come to be in Oregon?
It's a long story now.
Oregon
is not the first place in the United States where I landed, like, basically. I was in, the first place I came to was in Utah. And then I went to Wisconsin, Georgia. I worked for a few months in Seattle. And then I came to Oregon, basically. So I think I'll have to be a little bit louder.
Actually, it's the recording level is pretty good.
I tested it out with my son.
Because
my voice is a little bit lower than other people.
If you want, here, we'll do this.
So, yeah, Oregon is the place where I landed, like, fourth or fifth place where I came to. So.
And how long have you been in Oregon?
It's been almost a year now.
Almost a year.
May 5th, yeah. That's when I came here.
Oh, so a year and 2 days.
Today is the 3rd.
Right, so the 5th. So a year in 2 days.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay.
And how long have you been in the United States?
4 years now.
4 years?
Yeah.
Now, were you recruited by a company in India to come over to the States to work? Or
No. What happened was, as soon as I finished my master's degree, through the campus interview, I got a job. So for a year and a half, I worked with that Indian company over there, and they sent me to this place on a deputation. So they had contracts running here.
Okay.
After 1.5 years, once I gained enough experience, they said, okay, we've got a project there. Why don't you just go and work there for some time, and then if you want to come back or do whatever you want. So came here for a year.
Okay.
And that's when I was working for the company. When I decided, okay, I can try being here on a long-term basis, in the sense at least for 8-10 years.
Right.
So that's when I switched. Because my company, the previous company, would not process any green card or anything like that.
Right.
So
right.
I had to switch jobs.
Okay.
So that's when I joined my new company, through which I have been placed to many clients now, and Intel being the latest one.
Right, so you're a contractor here.
Yeah.
Now, so when you came over, you were on a temporary visa?
Still on a temporary visa. It's an H-1 visa.
H-1, okay. Yeah. Now, I know coming from Canada, it was certain immigration policies. Was it difficult to get a visa to come over to the United States to work?
Not very much.
No?
Not for me.
Okay. So. I went, in some of my pre-research, I went to indianet.com, and they have several links from employment agencies and also the U.S. consulate in India about how to process a visa. It looked to be about the same. I was wondering.
Yeah,
if
it's almost the same. It's almost the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because this H visa is basically the same wherever you come from, China, India.
Right.
Anywhere you come from.
So you didn't have any hassles to speak of from immigration coming
in?
No. We did.
I think Steve came here on a TN visa. That's
right.
And so sometimes it depends. Like there are fraudulent cases happening. That's like one in a million or so.
Right.
And that's when they have to be a little bit careful, because people just get some degrees and
just come out.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Apart from that, everything works fine, because people have the experience. People have worked back in India for so long, and based on that experience, they come over here.
Okay.
So
now, once you got to Oregon, did you contact any of the South Asian cultural or social groups to meet people, or did you sort of meet people through work?
Just through work. Yeah. But then the Indian grocery stores, they make a big difference, because that's where you get to meet a lot of other Indians who don't work for the same company but who live in Oregon.
Right.
Or in Portland. Yeah.
Right.
So
I know that there are, like, the India Cultural Association. I went to the India eHub website to try and see what other cultural and social organizations there were in Portland to try and...
Yeah, but we never went through those things.
No.
Because I was here for like already 3 years.
Right.
Before I landed here. So I was very much familiar with the place. I had to come here, get the apartment.
Right.
Settle down, that's all.
Yeah.
So that's pretty straightforward. Yeah.
That's good. Because I know that, speaking with some of the other people I've spoken with, they found coming here initially a little difficult.
Yeah, because they would have, see, that's why, like, Francis, I think, mm-hmm. came straight away to Oregon.
Right.
So he would have had a completely different experience of landing in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell you what happened when I came to Utah, because that was the first time I landed in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
But once I was in Atlanta, Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
Seattle,
right.
Oregon was just another place to be. In.
When you went to Utah, did you go to an extra effort to try and meet other people from South Asia or to acculturate yourself to...
The funny thing is, unlike Oregon, Utah has got very few Indians.
Right.
And especially the place where I lived in,
mm-hmm.
Provo,
mm-hmm.
very few Indians. We had like maybe 20 families
mm-hmm.
or 10 families, and we didn't even know them.
Right.
So there was no Indian grocery store as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what we could do? So only if we meet them in the office,
mm-hmm.
we there was a way of interacting.
Right.
So, and then I didn't have a car or anything. So,
very isolated.
Very isolated, yeah.
So.
But we had some good experiences there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've never been to Utah. Yeah. I've been through Utah mm-hmm. on a train, but never stopped there. Now, prior to leaving India, mm-hmm. and what area of India are you from?
Okay. I'm a South Indian.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Tamilian.
Okay.
Do you want me to spell that for you?
Yes, we could.
T-A-M-I-L. So
okay.
So that's my mother tongue, Tamil.
Okay.
And Tamil Nadu is a state which I belong to.
Okay.
In India.
Okay.
But I've never lived there.
You've never lived there? Okay.
I've never lived there. So I lived in a place called Gujarat.
Mm-hmm.
G-U-J-A.
G-U-J-A.
R-A-T.
R-A-T?
T. T.
T. Okay.
Yeah. So that's in the northern part of India.
Mm-hmm.
But Tamil Nadu, the state where I belong to, is in the southern part of India.
Okay. Okay. Now, is this, where you lived, is it primarily Hindi or?
Yeah.
Is that the language that's spoken there?
It's the Devanagari script, that's what they call
mm-hmm.
it. Hindi is one of the major script in Devanagari.
Mm-hmm.
But Gujarat has got its own. See, every state, there are like 26 states in India.
Right.
Every state has got its own language.
Right.
Most of them.
Most.
So Gujarat, the language in Gujarat is Gujarati.
Okay.
The language in Tamil Nadu is Tamil.
Mm-hmm.
So I can speak Tamil,
mm-hmm.
But I cannot read or write because I was never educated in that language.
Right, okay.
But I can read, write, and speak in Gujarati.
Okay. I know that Hindi and English are the two official languages, and so...
You can say that, but it's the official language. But if you go to the southern states, Hindi is, especially Tamil Nadu.
Mm-hmm.
There are other states where Hindi is accepted very much.
Mm-hmm.
But Tamil Nadu,
not.
Yeah. So you won't see signboards in Hindi or anything, unless it's a central government institution.
Okay.
Like railway stations
mm-hmm.
managed by the central government.
Right.
Only those ones.
Okay. So it's more of a government language.
But if you go to a private, if you go to a private shop or something,
mm-hmm.
they're not going to have Hindi on their boards.
Okay.
Because they somehow think their language is much better, so they just want to...
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
So
okay.
They just want to retain it because they feel Hindi is being imposed unnecessarily on them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it.
Okay. So in the state that you lived in, which I... How do you pronounce it again?
Gujarat.
Gujarat?
Yeah.
Gujarat?
Yeah.
What is the dominant religion there?
Okay. Hinduism.
It is Hinduism?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know there are some Christian states and some Sikh states, and there's many different...
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's... Yeah.
Okay. Now, another thing that I've noticed when I've been doing some background research are the websites are often broken down into regions, mm-hmm. so you can meet other people from your region.
Mm-hmm.
From your religion, I've seen the Indian Christian Fellowship,
okay.
the Islamic Society,
mm-hmm.
the Sikh religious, down at Portland State University.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any, I'm sure there are places in Portland for Hinduism, or I'm not sure
you mean to say websites?
Or even just places of worship, because
okay,
I've gone into...
There are some, I think there's one temple which
mm-hmm.
is managed privately
mm-hmm.
by, I think it's an ISKCON temple.
Mm-hmm.
as you know, Hinduism has got a lot of gods.
Right.
So I'm a Shaivite.
Mm-hmm. And how do you spell that?
S-H-A-I-V-I-T-E. I think that's what.
V-I-T?
V-I-T-E. Shaivite. Okay. It's actually worshippers of Shiva.
Oh, okay. I know who Shiva is.
Shiva, okay. So, but it's not that we just worship Shiva.
Right.
Doesn't mean that. So I go to a Vishnu temple.
Mm-hmm.
I go to a Brahma temple, mm-hmm. or Lakshmi temple. Could be any of the temples.
Mm-hmm.
We don't. It's not. We are restricted to a particular god.
Oh, okay.
So we go to any of those.
Okay.
Okay. Coming back to the topic.
Mm-hmm.
There's a temple out here.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an ISKCON temple.
Mm-hmm.
They have the Krishna, which is called an avatar of Vishnu.
Right.
Do you know about?
A little bit.
Okay.
Most of my East Indian friends are.
There are three main gods basically,
right,
in Hinduism: Brahma,
mm-hmm.
Vishnu, Shiva.
Right.
Okay. Vishnu. There are a lot of avatars in the sense of incarnations,
mm-hmm.
of different gods.
Right.
Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu.
Mm-hmm.
He's a mortal avatar of Vishnu.
Okay.
But he's got godly powers and all that. That's
right.
What this all
right.
Mythological.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's a temple out here in Portland for that.
Okay.
But I've never been to that place.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been to that place. I always wanted to, but never got the time or the inclination to go.
To go. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Most of my East Indian friends are up in British Columbia or Sikh.
Okay.
So I know from that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The
religion is different. So.
Yeah.
Most Caucasians think it's all the same, but it's not.
Pardon me?
Most Caucasians think it's all sort of the same thing, but it's definitely not.
It's very different.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yes, I know. Well, you were an easy interview. I'm trying to think of my other questions I had. Are you married?
Yeah.
You are married, yeah. It's... Your wife's name is
Sumathi.
S-U-M-A-T-H-I. Right. I knew how to spell. I wasn't quite sure how to. So, now, were you married when you came over?
No.
No.
I just got married like a year ago.
Okay.
So, a year and a half ago.
Yeah. Okay. Now, did you meet her here in the States?
No,
or
no, back in India.
Did you go back to specifically meet somebody?
That's right. Not somebody, but
see,
we have this concept of arranged marriages.
Right,
you know,
right.
About it. Okay.
Yep.
So, my parents...
Mm-hmm.
They would just advertise saying, okay, we've got this guy, this so and so, and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And people would respond based on those advertisements. So the national newspaper,
mm-hmm.
especially on, I think, Sundays,
mm-hmm.
carry a big matrimonial page, which basically advertises all the grooms and the brides and
right.
all that. So then it's, suppose if you find a bride from our
mm-hmm.
community,
mm-hmm.
that's very, a lot of people are not very specific to it nowadays, in the sense
mm-hmm.
they don't care about it nowadays.
Right.
But the real Orthodox people,
mm-hmm.
or semi-Orthodox people, semi-Orthodox people,
right.
they want the people of the same community.
Right.
So there's more understanding of the culture,
mm-hmm.
The eating habits and all that stuff.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons why people try to marry in the same community.
Okay, okay. My friends, three of which were born in British Columbia. One, she got married right out of high school to her cousin's friend from England. My other friend, he got married several years later, also to a girl from England.
Okay.
His twin married a Caucasian woman from Vancouver, BC.
Oh, okay.
So even being born in British Columbia, they were still very steeped in the arranged. Yeah.
Arranged
so,
marriage, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you're talking about the Indians right now.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
Very much. And especially, it's to be frank,
mm-hmm.
it's more, what do you call it, more stringent
mm-hmm.
in a North Indian family
okay,
than
in
a South Indian
mm-hmm.
family.
Okay.
So, that makes a difference.
Okay. Yeah, so, now, when your wife came over,
mm-hmm.
did she know anyone? I mean, did she have any friends of her own who were over in the States?
She had classmates.
Mm-hmm.
Who came the same way as her.
Okay.
And some of whom who came on jobs straight away.
Mm-hmm.
And then went back, got married, and maybe they got settled down there or mm-hmm. they just came here.
Right.
So she knew people out here,
so
in other states, basically.
Okay.
Not in Oregon.
Because I know that personally I didn't know anybody when I moved down here. It was very hard the first couple of months to meet people because Steve had work. You meet people.
Yeah.
So did your Now, you said that you talked to your wife about being interviewed as well.
Yeah, I didn't talk to her very much.
Okay.
But I just told her that I'm getting interviewed.
Okay, because I would be interested in talking with her as well from the female
Point of view. Okay.
Exactly. Okay. Does she work over here right now?
Yeah, she works right now.
Okay. So she, I know, well, Linny, Francis's wife, mm-hmm. didn't work when she first came over, so she was sort of in the, you know, how do you meet people? So your wife came to work pretty much right away?
No. No, the thing is, what happened was, when she came here, she came here on a H-4 visa.
Mm-hmm.
That's a dependent visa.
Right.
Okay. Now, when you're on that visa, you cannot work.
Correct.
Now, since I'd applied my green card,
mm-hmm.
I was at a stage where I could apply for something called an EAD.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Employment Authorization Document.
Right.
So once she got that approved, that was 8 months after she arrived
mm-hmm.
here. And then she started looking out for jobs and she got the one she's working for right now.
Okay. And where is she working? What does she do?
She's a software engineer.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So she also did a computer science
degree?
She did
an electrical engineering degree.
Okay.
And then she did a course in computer science.
Mm-hmm.
She worked in India for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, after that, we got married and she's working right now. Yeah.
Now, I know that sometimes from other people I've spoken to that you often start preparing for a career while you're still in high school.
Yeah, very much.
You found that as well in the area that you lived in?
Yeah. That's true because, first of all, the population of India is too large.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's too much of competition.
Right.
So what happens is if you don't do well in your 12th standard, we call that the 12th standard. It's basically the 12th grade here.
Right.
So if you don't do well there, you don't get admission in the good engineering colleges.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Suppose if you don't do well, you can join a different college
mm-hmm.
and then do a master's degree or something like that to basically balance the equation.
Right.
But yeah, you got to really make sure what you want to do in life from your 8th or 10th standard, so 10th grade
wow.
itself.
Yeah. So very different from here where at 30 I'm still in school.
There are certain advantages and disadvantages.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, see, when you're 18 or 15 or
mm-hmm.
whatever, you haven't seen most of life. Okay, you don't even know what you want to do. Whether you know what you can do,
mm-hmm.
but you don't know whether you would really fit into that or not.
Right.
So it's more like you're being molded in a particular fashion by the
mm-hmm.
society rather than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a drawback I see. The good thing I see here is you grow up, you see the world, and then you decide what you want to be.
Right.
So, but in a place where the population is so big, if you wait for so long to decide what you want to do, you'll be just left behind.
Right.
So that's the, it's a
good and
trade-off, good and bad thing.
Yeah. Now, one of the questions that we at the Historical Society have been pretty interested in,
mm-hmm.
The United States has often been called a melting pot,
mm-hmm.
where you come and you lose your identity.
Yeah.
Over the past 10 years, it's been changing more to the Canadian model of a mosaic or a quilt where you come, join society, but you still retain much of your own culture and identity.
Okay.
When you came over, did you purposely try to keep much of your Indian identity and culture without, what do you find that you, like for instance you said going to Indian grocery stores,
mm-hmm.
do you find that you try to become American or that you
I don't know how to say that, but the thing is okay, I never wanted to lose my Indian identity,
mm-hmm.
that's for sure.
Right.
Okay. When you're like brought up 25 years over there,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to all of a sudden lose whatever you learned there.
Right.
Okay. It's an asset, basically, you just want to keep.
Mm-hmm.
There are good things out here which I want to learn,
mm-hmm.
and there are bad things which I have been brought up with. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to like get a mixture of both of them. So I don't want to like completely change over to the American model or completely lose my Indian model,
mm-hmm.
Indian way of life. So that's... It wasn't as if I just wanted to erase my whole identity.
Right.
It makes no sense, as you see.
To do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. That's one thing.
And unless you really feel bad about what you did before, which I don't. So.
Right.
So.
Okay. That's it. Thank you.
That's it.
Yes. Okay. Well, you said you didn't, if we had spoken more, actually.
Maybe you can have that.